little difficult to start. There's so much between us. I prepared this seminar some time ago, and I gave it once in Russia, in Ukraine, in Odessa. And basically, the topic of this seminar is how the sound liberates the soul. But besides that, there are so many different topics, and I gave this seminar in 1999 when there was a lot of turmoil in at least Russian part of ISKCON, and a lot of different misconceptions about the liberation. Will I be saved or not? So this particular seminar was to prove the points about our salvation. And I took the title for this seminar, the last sutra of Vedanta Sutra, which is Anavritih Shabdat, Anavritih Shabdat. Srila Vyasadeva concludes his work where he explains very logically the whole system of Vedas, the whole philosophy of Vedas, by assuring us Anavritih Shabdat, Anavritih Shabdat, which means there is no return, there is no return, because of the Vedas, because of the scriptures, or from the scriptures we know that there is no return. But we also know that Srila Prabhupada translates this particular sutra in a very special or peculiar way. He says there is no return because of the sound. Because the word Shabda, you can translate as revelation, you can translate as Vedic scriptures, and you can translate as a sound. So Srila Prabhupada specifically explains this sutra in connection with our practices, which we do in ISKCON, as Anavriti Shabdat, liberation from the sound or by the sound. And of course we know many confirmations of this in the Vedic literature, specifically in Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, Abrahma Bhuvanal Loka Punaravarti Narjuna Mamupetya Tukanteya Punarjanmana Vidyate. He says that the one who meets with me, and that's actually the explanation of this sutra by Ramanuja Acharya, he says, as soon as you meet with the Lord, who is the most blissful, the most merciful, the most beautiful, the most attractive person, as soon as you meet with him face to face, there is no return. Why? Because there is no reason for return. Because it's obvious. Because there is no question of return. Because you are content. You are satisfied. You found what you were looking for. And this particular issue of salvation, or our liberation, so to speak, and of course it's also confirmed in many other places in Bhagavad Gita, Janma karma cha me divyam evanyo veti tatvataha taktva deham punar janmana iti mameti sorjuna. But we have to understand also that this topic of salvation, no return, or the topic of liberation, is the main subject matter of all religions. Religions specifically deal with this thing. And if we consider or if we analyze how religions deal with this, basically we will understand, like now, there is a fierce competition between different religions. And the competition means every religion wants to get the customers, if we deal with this subject matter in the terms of business. So what is the product every religion gives on the market? That's exactly the product which religion gives on the market, salvation. Every religion say, you come to us, you be our customer, and you will be saved. And of course they have, you know, black PR for other religions. They say the product of other religions are not good, you know. You will not get salvation there. You come to us, only in our, you know, parish you will get salvation. And if you go to, you know, to some other religion, you will not get salvation. And this is how they keep the followers. You know, this is a very ancient technique of keeping the religious followers, saying that you don't go to other places because there is no salvation. Like recently there was a debate in Russia about Hare Krishna temple, and Orthodox Christians, they became really wild. They went berserk. They went on TV, on media, everywhere, and they said, you know, don't go to this Hare Krishnas because there is no salvation there. Salvation is only here. There was one man on TV. He was, you know, heavy man. And he stood there and he said, everyone knows that you can only be saved in Christianity. No other way. No other way to be saved. And of course, we also know that within our own, you know, and if you go to even to the Christianity, you go, and you go to Catholic Christians, and they will say, oh, there is no salvation in other Christian denominations. Salvation is only here. Everyone else goes to hell. Everyone else is doomed. And you go to somebody else, and they say the same thing. And we, of course, know that within our own tradition, so to speak, we also see this kind of technique. Sometimes people from one Gaudiya Vaishnava group go to another Gaudiya Vaishnava group and they say, what are you doing here? Are you sure you will be saved? You know, is your guru Mahabhagavata? You know, you can only be saved if your guru is Maha, Super Mahabhagavata. And in this way they get the customers. They say, you know, this is not good, you go here. And of course in ISKCON we say, you know, Prabhupada is only here, therefore you can only be saved here, right? This is how we keep our followers. In other words, it's a very crucial subject matter, which I want to consider more closely to analyze how the salvation takes place. And I will try to take help of some Srimad Bhagavatam verses from the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and also some Jiva Goswami's passages from Bhakti Sandarbha, where he describes this particular subject matter. And of course, sometimes even we, being devotees, develop some doubts. You know, are we saved? In Christianity, everything is simple. You know, you go to a Christian religion and they say, you just believe in Jesus Christ and you're saved. He has already paid off all your karmic debts, all your karmic reactions. All your sins are absolved. You know, he was crucified, he suffered for you. Haribol. You don't have to worry so much. So, and basically, what they say, and we see the same basic psychology in our customers, so to speak, or in members of ISKCON. They say, you come to us and you get salvation very easily by the means of, you know, being a member of this particular group or this particular religion. You're guaranteed to get the salvation. And or you do some particular ritual. You get how it's called, baptized, and by, you know, if you're baptized, that's it, you know, it's more or less it. Like once I was, somebody was trying to convert me into the Muslim religion. It was very funny. So they were explaining to me the glories of this Muslim faith and everything. And then they were looking, you know, it was a very fanatical people, you know, they had big eyes and, you know, shining eyes, and they were looking at me, you know, trying to pierce my stupid heart with their words, so charged with transcendental knowledge. So I was looking at them rather dull, you know, not so much impressed. So, and they explained to me, you know, I don't remember the arguments. There was no real arguments, you know. There's some trees in Germany grew in a way that it's in Arabic, Allah is God, or something like this, you know, that was crazy statements, or something like this. So some Danish lady went through the graveyard at night and she heard some voices, and she became a Muslim after that because that was a proof of Muslim religion, something like this. So at the end, they looked at me and they said, "Are you ready?" So I said, "What should I do?" What? And before that, they told me, "You will be saved even if you are a bad Muslim. You know, it's not the problem. You don't have to be a very good Muslim. You don't have to follow all these rules, regulations, you know." And so I asked, what shall I do? They said, you just chant this formula. And there was some formula in Arabic language, you know, I have to pronounce this, and that's it, you're Muslim. And then you're saved. And even if you don't belong to Muslim religion, but even if you're good, if you are so pious and this and that, you will never be saved. You will go to hell for eternity. So that was the rationale behind this. So I chanted this formula just in case. Without being very much convinced. But sometimes we see the same kind of psychology among the devotees. Like, I'm being often asked, what will happen with somebody who has been following the regulative principles, who has been chanting Maha Mantra, this and that, but he somehow or other happened not to get initiation. He didn't get initiation. Will he be saved or not? You know, and how he will be saved? Is there any chance for his salvation? And we can see that this psychology is there because people, they after the first initiation, and you know, and they get the first initiation, and they think, now I'm saved, and they, you know, they feel a little better. But then after a while, they again develop some doubts, maybe because I don't have the second initiation, therefore there is no progress and there is no real feeling of salvation. And then they get the second initiation, sometimes they get the third initiation with the hope to be saved. Again, the same underlying principle is there, that you get saved or liberated through some kind of ritual or through some kind of, you know, trick. Some magic trick has to be done for your salvation. And also, of course, this issue about guru, whether my guru is capable of saving me. I'm such a, you know, difficult case to be saved. Whether he has enough strength and power, spiritual power, to give me this elevated state of salvation. And what is going on? How the salvation is taking place, or how the liberation is taking place. So, and sometimes, of course, this is, again, being exploited within ISKCON or within other religions. You know, people say, we hear this again and again and again. Again, this motivating factor of being saved, like, you know, you take part in such and such project. And if you take part in such and such project, for sure, this is guaranteed, you know. This is it. Like now I'm engaged in Moscow project, and I'm always tempted to use this technique or to apply this technique. You take part in building this big temple in Moscow, and all the, you know, acharyas in our sampradaya will come to save you at the moment of death. So this is because, again, this is our product. This is what people want from religion. That's basically why they come to religion. And sometimes they want it cheaply. And oftentimes, in most cases, they offer this salvation in a very cheap price. And if you offer them, you know, you take this little ritual, make this little ritual, chant this holy sound vibration or this formula, or take part, and give some little money, you know, give... Not little money, of course, you know, for salvation you have to give some substantial money. And that's it, you are saved. So, because this is what we are selling on the market. And therefore, this is a very interesting thing, you know, who saves us? Is our guru saves us? Will he come at the moment of our death, and will he take us through our sikha? Or Krishna will himself come, because he himself says, you know, Bhavami Nachiram Partha Mrityu Samsara Sagarat, I will take you out from this ocean of material nations. Or, you know, who will save us? Jesus Christ will save us, you know, because the, we hear this all the time. Jesus saves, you know. Like Suhotra Swami, he always jokes, he says, Jesus saves and Moses invests. He says that this is the salvation according to the Christian tradition. So what I wanted to talk a little bit about, how the salvation takes place, and how, what is the mechanism, and what are the important factors. Because all these factors are important. The initiation is important. Guru is important. The sound vibration is important. Krishna is, of course, most important. But how it takes place. But first, I wanted to speak today specifically about the need for salvation and the different conceptions or misconceptions of salvation which are there. And also bring closer to the original topic through analyzing some verses in Bhagavad Gita. I don't know if I have time for this. But basically the need for salvation is specifically mentioned by Krishna in the verses which I already quoted, Abrahma Bhuvanan Laka or Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam. The deep-rooted need for salvation within our heart, the reason for this is exactly this understanding of the temporary nature of this world and our temporary existence. In other words, we feel that this is not our final destination, because we're here temporary, because everything is temporary, and we feel that we're temporary, we feel that something is wrong with it. That there is some kind of, we feel that the state we are in, every human being feels this, has this feeling, that the state we are in is not the final. It's transitory. And, you know, you either will go up, or you will go down, or you will remain here, but you have to do something, and you have to come to your final destination. And basically, we are separated from our eternal nature. The problem, the main problem within our heart is that we are separated from the eternal nature of the soul. And because we are separated from eternal nature, we don't feel this eternal nature. We don't feel the eternal destination, and therefore we are seeking for some kind of means to get to this final destination. And this state of consciousness is of course called avidya or ignorance. And that's exactly what we have to be saved from. We have to be saved from this avidya, which in turn causes our temporary situation in this material world. And the result of this temporary situation, the result which actually makes the need for salvation is even more, or liberation, even more acute, is the fear. Because we are temporary in this material world, we always feel fear. We're always fearful. Because the very word salvation implies that we're fearful. And, of course, there are so many kinds of fear, and there are so many reasons of fear, but Srimad Bhagavatam gives the very profound definition of fear, which I want to discuss a little bit for a few minutes about. And Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto, it is said, Bhayam dvitiya binivesat aksyat, ishadapet asya vipariyo smritih. And basically, the root cause of the fear is explained in this verse where it is said, Bhayam dvitiya abinivesat aksyat. Bhaya, or fear, is caused by dvitiya abinivesa. And dvitiya, of course, means duality. But dvitiya also means, or may mean, secondary. And abinivesa means absorption. And what Srimad Bhagavatam wants to say to us is that the bhaya of fear, or this psychological condition of desire to be saved, of fearful condition being in this world, is because we're absorbed in something secondary. We're, of course, absorbed in duality of this world, in heat and cold, in man and woman, this all kinds of dualities, but we're also absorbed in the secondary nature. And it's interesting that basically Lord Krishna, when he explains the borderline between the demoniac and divine natures, he takes this particular quality of fear as the principle for distinguishing between them. When he says that divine natures have particular qualities, what is the first quality which he gives? Yeah, avayam. Avayam sattva samsudhir. He said that the first quality which actually signifies that you have divine nature is that lack of fear, is complete absence of fear. You become totally fearless. And on the contrary, if we see the demonic people who develop or who cherish these demonic qualities as kama, lust, krodha, anger and greed, lobha, they're always fearful. The demonic person, they're most fearful people. They always fear. You know, if we take any dictator or whatever who wants the power in this material world, he's the most fearful person. So this abhayam comes from this absorption in the secondary nature. We forget about our primary cause. We forget about Krishna and we turn away from Krishna. It's amazing to what extent, if we analyze again our psychology, if we analyze it, we will see to what extent we are absorbed in this secondary nature, in the secondary things. We chant Hare Krishna, right? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And then the fly flies in front of you. And you forget about Krishna, you're concentrated on the fly. Sometimes it also happens, you know. Or the, you know, little mosquito lands on your head. And you forget about Krishna and you're all, you know, you're chasing this mosquito because you have to retaliate for this Mahaparat which he did to you. So, and that's what in Srimad Bhagavatam it is explained, because it is said there, Bhayam dvitiya abhinivesha taksyat, as soon as you turn away from the Lord, as soon as you're absorbed in this secondary nature, so to speak, then what happens with you, ishata petasya viparyaya smritih, your memory or your intelligence, because Krishna makes very profound connection in Bhagavad Gita between the intelligence and memory. He says when your memory is perverted or blurry, when your memory is not clear, then you lose your intelligence. And it is said, viparyaya smritih, your memory or your intelligence becomes perverted because you turned away from the Lord, because you absorbed in this secondary nature, and this secondary nature actually took place or took precedence within your heart. It's more important for you. And if we be honest, you know, if we are honest, we can look within our heart and we can understand that there are so many things which are more important for us than God. You know, so many things, you know. Especially if we go to a, you know, shopping center, you know, so many things are more important. They totally block our memory of the Supreme Lord, who is the most beautiful and who is the most important. And therefore, viparyaya smritih, your memory, your intelligence becomes totally perverted. Or as Sridhar Swami, he very... very interestingly and very actually deeply, he gave very profound explanation to this verse. He said, because of this, you lose the focus. And because you lose the focus, you develop the separate interest. This absorption in the secondary things is actually this separatist mentality, which is again being described in Srimad Bhagavatam as Beda Drishti. Or the outlook of the world which is separated from the Lord. And as Siddhar Swami says, you develop the provincial interest, you know, like the people who live in the countryside, they have this little strange, very narrow-minded interest, provincial. They're living in the province. So, and the same thing, we lost track, we lost actually the main focus of our life. We lost God as the center, and this is the root cause of all our subsequent problems. And that specifically manifests in our sick or diseased consciousness. There's absorption in secondary, not important things, which are sometimes, you know, it's amazing. I always wonder while looking at my own heart, you know. You go to some internet site, and of course, internet site is the best illustration for, you know, being absorbed in something which is not important. You know, people, they surf on the internet for, you know, some people, they die because they forget of eating and they forget of drinking. They are just, you know, they absorbed in all this news, you know, this news and that news and this and that. And that. Amazing. You know? And you forget altogether about the Lord, and therefore your intelligence becomes so perverted, so sick. This is, we have to understand that this lack of absorption or lack of concentration when we try to chant the holy name or when we try to concentrate on sadhana, on religious practice, on following the rules and regulations, is the condition of disease, is the condition of deadly disease which we have, which we developed. And this deadly disease makes us, you know, viparya smriti, absent-minded. Viparya, you can translate this, you know, when people, when they become old and senile, you know, they develop this disease which Mr. Reugen had. How it's called? The difficult name. Alms. Whatever. So, usually these people, it's interesting, these people, they don't remember something which happened to them 2 minutes ago, something which is important, but they usually remember which is something which is far away. They remember very well the, you know, the memories of the abuse or whatever, but something which is there, just in front of them, they don't remember. And in the same way, this viparyaya smriti, this perverted memory, means that we don't remember something which we have to remember all the time. We don't remember the Lord, but we remember everything else which is far away from us, which has nothing to do with us, which actually really inconsequential, is really secondary, really not important. So this is the symptom of this disease. It's actually much worse than this disease which Mr. Reugen had. Much worse. And every one of us has this symptom of this disease. And because of this disease, the whole material life, the tragedy or drama of material life envelops. And another symptom of our need for salvation. Why do we need salvation? That's one thing, because we are fearful. And another, of course, feeling which every one of us has within the heart is this feeling of incompleteness. We feel that something is lacking. Why do we need? Ultimately, why do we need God? Because we feel that something is lacking. And because of this, we develop so many desires. Actually, there is a very interesting description in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. The description of this particular quality of incompleteness of the human being, or our kind of, that we are lacking something in this world. It is said that every human being has only four desires. Everyone has only four desires. Would you subscribe to this view? Do you have four desires or you have more desires? But in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad it is said that basically all the desires, all the wide range of desires which we may have, basically they boil down to four basic desires, four main desires which are there. It is said that there are four desires. The one desire, the first desire, is that we desire wife. Of course, in being politically correct, we have to say that we desire wife or husband, right? The first desire, the desire number one, we desire somebody who is near us, who will make us more complete. Basically, the desire for the spouse, for a wife or the husband, is the desire, coming from this feeling of incompleteness. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad describes these four desires, and then Brihadaranyaka Upanishad describes how God fulfilled all the desires by giving conditioned soul, foolish, stupid conditioned soul, who has chosen to be in this material world, different things to fulfill his desires. In Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, it is explained that, and it's a very humorous or ironic description. It is said that, you know, everyone here is condemned, everyone here is feeling this lack of or incompleteness within himself, the lack of contact with the complete whole, as Prabhupada translates this verse in the Upanishad. And it is said there that, first of all, to make somebody, you know, and we came here, and God provided us with everything which we need. We came here because we wanted to turn away from God. We wanted to turn away from Him. We didn't want to be with Him. We wanted to be separate. We wanted to develop this separate interest. So, and God, the Supreme Lord, Krishna, He knew how miserable we will be. He knew how completely frustrated we will be. So first thing He provided for us to feel good about ourselves in this material world, what do you think, what is it? The first and most important thing for us to feel good in this material world about ourselves. What did He give?
Family members,
that will come a little later. False figure, but specifically, not really false figure. It is said there, He gave us the mind. So the most glorious gift of the Lord to us is the mind. He gave us the mind for what? To feel good about ourselves, right? Because what is the mind? In the mind we can create the image of ourselves, which is much more beautiful than the Lord, right? In our mind we can create the image of ourselves to be the center of this universe, isn't it? We are the center of this universe. We don't need God, right? I am the most beautiful, I am the most intelligent, and I am the most charitable, and I am the most pious, and I am the most, you know, and I am always right, right? Of course, you are. What else you could be if you are the Lord? If you came here to pretend to be the Lord for this particular purpose, and, you know, we feel good about ourselves. You know, we always feel good about ourselves. Sometimes we feel bad about ourselves. And Satchinandana Swami will come to teach us how to feel bad about ourselves, you know, because this is the first step of Sharanagati. But this is a very difficult science, in fact. But nobody needs to learn how to feel good about ourselves, you know. No matter who you are, you may be the dullest, the most ugly, the most miserable person, you still are so proud about yourself. You're so loving towards yourself. Because in your mind, you created a very attractive feature of yourself. And this is the first gift of the Lord, because of His compassion. Being compassionate, He didn't want us to be miserable all the time. And He wanted us to be happy, and because He knew that we couldn't be happy without Him, so He gave us the mind. And then, as it is said, that the first characteristic desire, still, despite of being so good, you know, we have to have somebody who would appreciate how good we are, right? Because if we are all alone, it's not, the happiness is not complete. So the first desire of the human being is to have somebody whom we can always, all the time, 24 hours a day, explain how good we are. Isn't it the purpose of family life? Two people get together to have the audience all the time, which would be forced to hear how nice we are and how right we are, right? You know, this is what the husband tries to prove to the wife, that I am always right, and this is what the wife tries to prove to the husband, that she is right. So this is another desire, which is again betraying our faulty nature, our incomplete nature in this material world. And therefore in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad it is said, but again we know that despite of this desire to have somebody nearby with whom we can speak, with whom we can associate, whom we can try to prove something, sometimes it doesn't happen. Sometimes, you know, exactly because of this reason, because we are so absorbed in ourselves, people, they get frustrated being with us. Well, sometimes we don't get the wife and the, you know, husband or whatever. So in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad it is said that because the Lord knew that sometimes you will not get the spouse, the Lord gave to you something which would substitute this and which would fulfill your desire. What do you think it is? Which every one of us has. Which actually substitutes the company. When you're alone and nobody is with you, what are you doing? You speak with whom? With yourself, right? And it's always nice to speak with an intelligent person, so it's so you speak with yourself and you're engaged in this nice conversation. So it is said in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad that the Lord gave to fulfill this desire of the stupid conditioned soul, to fulfill the desire in company, in association, the Lord gave this power of speech. The power of speech is actually the substitute. And if you don't have the wife, it doesn't matter, you know. You can speak with yourself. And for sure, you will understand yourself better than anybody else. So this is another gift of the Lord. He gave the mind, and then he gave the power of speech. Then again, another desire which everyone has is desire to have children. Because, in other words, you want to produce something. You want to create. Another desire which is very deep. And it may not be manifested as the, you know, creation of the children. You may create some, you know, machine or some invention, this and that. It doesn't matter really. You know, there is this desire to see that this is something which I have created, right? You know, this is my children, you know. The dirty little guys who are running all over the place, and you're so proud because this is my. I created them. So, and this is, again, very, very, very essential desire of, or very essential psychology of any human being. They want to create something. You know, like little children, what they do? They take this pencil and they take little, you know, something, and they, you know, they paint something, and it's really ugly. They paint something, you know, big, elongated, with, you know, with the hairs all over the place, you know. And they go to you and say, look, this is I created, you know, and this is something good. So, because you want to produce something. Every human being has this desire of psychology to produce something. And very ironically, it is said in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, therefore, God gave you the power to breathe. You know, if you cannot produce anything, you can just produce the hot air from your throat, you know. So you're doing something, you are engaged. So then it is said, and then everyone wants wealth. Everyone wants to be wealthy, everyone wants money. That's another very basic, very fundamental desire within the heart. Everyone wants to possess something. And to fulfill this desire of the human being, God gave a very beautiful instrument. What do you think it is? By which we can possess anything in this material world. What is it? Yes, eyes. Exactly. Eyes. Eyes is this brilliant creation of the Lord by which you can just look, you know, look at this building and you feel like, you know, it's mine, right? Eyes is the special device or special instrument for you to be envious or for you to feel good, you know, because by eyes you can feel as if you have something. And then finally, there is another desire, which is actually the most important desire. Out of all these desires, besides all these desires, yes, you want to have children, or you want to create something, you want to have the spouse, you want to have wealth, but you also want to ensure your future happiness, your future good life. And for that, to fulfill this desire of the human being, God gave something very important to us. What is it?
Intelligence.
Not really. By which you can get this understanding or get this, ensure yourself that you will get the good future. Shrotriyam. Your ears. Because by hearing about the future life, by hearing, you can really ensure your good future. And actually, that's what people need the ears for. Ears they need to see their future. And this may be the perspective of the religious life, or this may be the perspective of any other, you know, promises which they gave. Like the politicians, they play with this desire for people to have the future, the bright future. They come and they say, you please elect me. And if you elect me, I will give you this and that and this and that. And poor living entities, they have these big ears. And they listen to this rubbish. Listening to this rubbish, they develop this belief. Yes, yes, my future will be bright, isn't it? You know, you listen to any politician or any religious leader or anyone, you know, in this world. And this is what is it all about. They will try to provide you with this understanding that your future will be bright. And this all together constitute our false situation in this material world. This is all false, illusory happiness in this material world. And therefore, you know, ultimately we are suffering by this, and we are missing the point. Again, the point here is that we turned away from the Lord, and we want to compensate our incompleteness by all these artificial means. And ultimately, we need the Lord Himself. And that's what we have to understand. The religion and the way of religious life is to explain people this basic but the most important idea. That to be happy in this material world, you need the Lord. You need to have the Lord. You need to come closer to Him. That's what has to be there. But again, in this world, because of our perverted intelligence, because of the perversion which is there deep within our heart, because of this, even if we understand this idea, the motivation to achieve the Lord, or to come closer to Lord, or to achieve this liberation, or the state of liberation, or the state of salvation, may be perverted. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains this in his Sri Chaitanya Shikshamritam. He says that people who are trying to engage, and listen, please listen very carefully, because this is very important. This has very important role in our life. Because those people who are intelligent, those people who have more or less not so perverted intelligence, they sooner or later they understand, I need God. I have to practice some religion. I have to come to religion. I have to do some religious practices. But because the perversion is still there, when they come to any religion, they may apply this perverted intelligence towards the religion, and that's exactly the reason why so many perverted religions are there in this material world. So it's not enough even to come to a good religion, because we may come to a good religion with a bad intentions, with a bad perversions. And it's not really, of course, the particular religions, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions them, they're creations of this perverted intentions or perverted desires of the human being. But we may be in the right place, in the right religion, but still we can miss the point. And this vision of the goal, the proper vision of the goal, is extremely essential. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that basically there are four intentions, or there are four motivations for people to come to religion. And he says the first and the most basic motivation is bhaya, the same kind of thing, fear. You have the fear, you feel this need because to be saved, and you come to religion to be saved because of this fear. And this bhaya or fear, you can see in many religions it plays very important role. You go to Christianity, one day will say. They will say, God, you know, yeah. God is loving, but you better behave yourself nicely. Because otherwise you will be condemned to death. Well, not to death, you will be condemned for eternity in hell. You know, any religion, or so to speak, conventional religion, mundane religion, you know, and this factor or this motivation of bias, of fear, plays very important role. Like if you take Buddhism. Buddhism actually entirely based on fear. Because it is explained as this whole creation. You know, if you translate, of course, Buddhists say there is not God. There is no God. But if you translate Buddhist religion in terms of God, you will get the picture, horrible picture. There is a cruel God who condemned you for sufferings. And the only way to escape these sufferings is to become what? Is to become nothing. Is to commit the suicide. There is this cruel God who created this world. You know, and this is actually, this is the idea of religion which many people have. Many people have this idea that this world is bad by nature and that was intentionally created by a cruel God. And ultimately salvation means somehow or other you escape from this world. If you take Hindu religion, you know, in its, again, perverted form as Advaita Vedanta or Advaita philosophy, basically the same idea is there. The same idea. You have to commit your suicide. Satchinandan Maharaj, Hare Krishna. How can I continue in your presence? When you are supposed to start your seminar?
I heard soon.
Do you know the exact?
10:50.
Now? Oh, 10:50.
5 minutes ago.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know because I heard. Oh, okay. So I'm already 10 minutes late. No. I'm talking about salvation, and there is no. Okay, so we have to stop now. I'm really sorry. I saw that it was later. I didn't do intentionally. Okay. Thank you very much. We will continue tomorrow.